If you take our seats, please, we'll begin. Good evening, everyone at home. We're waiting for a council member. We'll begin momentarily. Anybody know where she went? That's true. Went to get her calendar? These are for all of us. Good evening. Thank you for your patience. Welcome to everybody who's with us tonight. Welcome to the March 13th, 2012 Morro Bay City Council meeting. Let the record reflect that all members of council are present, and we'll begin, please, with a moment of silence. If you would please stand and face the flag, we'll be led in the pledge by Mr. Craig Schmid.
Thank you for the privilege. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic.
We'll be that Friday evening at the Community Center starting at 5:30. The individual price of the tickets are $20, and there are tables for eight for $150, and you can contact most anyone at the police department if you're interested in tickets. Thank you.
Thanks. Noah?
Thank you. A couple of quick updates. One is that we did convene the City Council's goal-setting meeting last week. We had two meetings. A couple of members of the public attended, as well as most of the department heads. And it was a good discussion about the city's goals over the next 12 months and on into the future. And you can expect an update from the council of the results of that workshop and what we identified as the top priorities for the community, most likely coming out in late April. And those will be presented for some discussion at the council again in the public forum. And we have our pool foundation, the Morro Bay Community Pool Foundation fundraiser coming up this Friday, March 16th from 6 to 10 p.m. at the historic Borradori Garage. It's going to be a dinner, and all proceeds from that dinner go to the Community Pool Foundation's efforts to raise funds for a community pool located in Morro Bay. If you're interested in that, the website is morrobaypool.org. morrobaypool.org, or you can call specifically for the fundraiser to get tickets, 995-3036. Our veteran support group, hosted by Deanna Kennedy, is coming up with a monthly meeting. It's coming up Tuesday, March 20th at the Eagles Hall on North Main Street, 2988 North Main. And that's from 6 to 8 p.m., and it's a lot of resources for veterans to help them get in touch with what they are due and support for them for their service for the community and for our country. And the last quick update was that we had our economic development meeting earlier this morning, and Ms. Johnson, if you'd like to review that a little bit in your... Okay. We basically talked about the economic development proposal that we've invited the chamber to bring forward, and we looked at a draft of that. And the next step for that draft is to take that to the Community and Business Forum, which is the second and fourth Thursdays of the month at the Embarcadero Grill. So This draft presentation of the economic development proposal is going to be the 22nd of March, Thursday, 9 a.m. at the Embarcadero Grill. So take a look there if you're interested in the components of the proposal.
Okay, just a couple others here. Thank you, Noah, for covering that one for us. I best not forget the Morrow Photo Expo this time. That's March 30th and 31st, held all over the city. You can get information on their website about classes and activities. The Morrow Bay Beautiful will be holding their annual yard sale March 31st to April 1st. The date for signing up is closed, but maps will be available at the Locksmith on Morrow Bay Boulevard. So get out and recycle some things that you need that other people no longer need. And the last thing is the AAUW's 26th annual garden tour is the last weekend in April, Sunday the 29th. We have four wonderful gardens in Morrow Bay, including the community garden up on Ironwood, and they promised to let us in their shed to check it out. And another beautiful garden in Los Osos. And all the money from this event goes to scholarships. I have tickets available. They're still only $10, and they're also available at Miners and Coalesce Bookstore. So get your tickets early.
You did cover a lot. I guess I'm going to make a comment about the upcoming political season, which basically is all this year starting now. Four of us are running for mayor, myself, Carla, Jamie, and Joe. Joe Jukic. I'm going to withhold the council candidate information until it closes tomorrow. We'll see who that is, and then next time I will announce who those are. I'm calling on my supporters to keep it positive. And really, I'm calling on everybody. And I'm not trying to be naive here. I know what's going to happen, and some people are just incapable of positive rhetoric. But if somebody's for me, you know, say you're for Bill and Y, and if you're for Carla, say you're Carla and Y, and if you're for Jamie, say so, and you know, don't bash the others, because I just think in our small town it's very counterproductive, and it
the stairs from the Morrow Rock parking lot down to the beach, and I know you guys are all working on it still, and I just want to say thank you very much for still considering all that and working it and trying to put it forward. It's been 50 years that people have been crawling those rocks and kids and everything, and it's about time to make it easier on everybody. And I think it'll be something really nice that we all can look forward to in the future when we see people using those stairs, go, you know, we all did something really nice for everybody. So thank you again. And I had a chance to talk with Eric over there about some different ideas about it, and so he's considering some of those thoughts, and I just want to thank you again.
Great.
Thanks for coming down. You guys had a great job. All right.
Thanks for coming down tonight, Robert. Hello.
Good evening, Mayor Yates, council members, and Morrow Bay residents. I'm Susan Brown, General Manager, Morrow Bay Transit and Trolley. What I have here tonight is one of the new permanent bus stop signs that we've got. I'd like to thank City. That's up on the overhead also, Morrow Bay Transit bus stop. That's one that was taken at the community center. And I'd like to thank Janine for getting them, the city staff for working on that, and also thank Walter Rosa for hanging those signs exactly the way we wanted them. And also I want to thank Walter for trimming up the trees today at the Jamaica Street bus stop. What a treat. This is the one of the kiosks that goes with them. It hangs right below that. So they're brand new. Morrow Bay Transit's able to stop, besides these stops, it's able to stop anywhere that's safe to do so along the route to pick up people and to let them off. A person just has to stand by the curb and wave, and the bus will pull over and stop for them if it's safe to do so. And then to exit the bus, just tell their driver ahead of time where you want to get out, and the bus will stop along the route as soon as it comes to your destination. Now, if someone wants to go to a place that's off the bus route, they can do that too, such as if they want to go to the waterfront or they want to go to their home, they please call the day before and schedule the ride. However, if you ask your driver, it's usually possible to take you off route, and you can just say, could you take me to my home? The regular discount fare is 60 cents. For an extra $1.90, you can go to your destination and ask for that ride. Or if you're a regular fare payer, $1.25 is the fare. For another $1.25, you can get a ride to your home or your destination. But for a guaranteed ride, you call the dispatcher the day before, between 8 and 10, Monday through Friday. Number is 772-2744. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. Thanks for coming down tonight.
Hi.
Hi. My name is Kelly Lewis. I've lived in Morroway for 40 years. I remember when I was young, many times, I'm a procrastinator. Salmon season would open up, groggily go down to Virgis and purchase a license. I'm not the only procrastinator out there. And now, when you go down to Virgis to purchase a license at 6 in the morning, well, they've moved. And so I'm asking you respectfully to uphold your exception for off-site sign. I know that a lot of tourists come into town. They drag their boat into town. They're early in the morning. They need to purchase a license. Virgis is the only place in the county that will sell you a license at 6 in the morning on a Saturday. Anybody that comes in and purchases a license to go fishing, sport fishing in Morro Bay, is going to bring revenue to this city. They're going to stay in a hotel. They're going to eat in our restaurants. They're going to shop in our shops. So for the sake of Morro Bay and for the user-friendliness that we need to present to people out there that don't live in this community, we're here for your sport fishing needs. Come into town. There's a sign going to tell you where to go to get a license when it's early in the morning and nobody else is open. So I ask you to uphold your exception for that sign ordinance.
Thank you, Kelly. Thank you for coming down tonight. Jamie? Hi.
Good evening. I guess it is official. So officially, I am a candidate for mayor of Morro Bay. Thanks for that introduction. Tonight, I'd like to request that you pull item A4 for discussion. With the loss of Sue Lichtenbaum, there's a big void to fill, and I know that responsibility is upon everybody here. But right now, we have a degraded infrastructure on the waterfront. Our harbor department equipment is in need of upgrade and replacement. We almost lost a boat, as I understand it, the other day on a rescue, putting employees at risk. Our city's infrastructure needs help. If we look at our streets and our wastewater treatment plant, we're all aware of that. I would propose that we set a long-range
to purchase bricks that will be in the front of the new building and the walkway in. The money for this goes to the Stuart Reed Memorial Foundation of the Friends, and that money is used to help in the scholarship of our firefighters for paramedic school and the fire academy. And so the other thing I think is important is that you're going to have something that will last a lifetime because it's going to be there. And I figured if the other fire department lasted for, it seemed 100 years, but it was probably 75, this one should last for a couple hundred. So, you know, we'll all be pushing up daisies by then. But it would be something good. And you can have on that, you get two lines, you get 15 characters per line on the brick, or you can buy the stone. That's a little more expensive. Starts around $500. You could have logos like that or anything you want. Or you could have, like, the Taylor family, name all the people. And it's good for posterity. So if anyone needs to get it, they can get it from me at 772-2852. That's 772-2852. Or the chamber has them and the fire department has these order forms. And if anyone has questions, they can call me or Homer, Alexander, and we'll be glad to answer any questions and take your money. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Keith. Good evening, Ron. Welcome to Morro Bay.
Hello, Mayor Yates, members of the council. I'm Ron DiCarli, executive director of the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments, and I'm up here today to talk about item C1, your Cerro Bay transit proposal that our agency has helped develop. As you may recall, I came to speak to this council in September and basically indicated that your Morro Bay transit system is not sustainable. Increasing costs, reductions in services, and most importantly, kind of reduced long-term revenue source. As a consequence, we worked to develop another alternative. Your staff's evaluated that alternative. We'd like to indicate that, you know, at this time, your system continues to operate very poorly. Low ridership, 5 people per hour. Typical standard is 10 to 12. A high overhead rate, $109,000. For a very small system. That's been revised downward, and I think that's compliment your staff for those revisions. It's now at $60,000, still at 45%, still relatively high, where the industry standard is 10 to 15. The Cerro proposal that we've identified, we've used an industry standard of 7.5%, which is a cost of about $13,000. The city feels that's should be revised upward, and that's the prerogative of your staff. It does include a very low fare box ratio, 4% real fare box ratio. Your staff report indicates 21%. We've been in discussions with your staff. There's some errors in the calculations, so there will be a change in those fare box ratios identified in the fiscal audit. Because we've changed the accounting practice, we have now using the city is using a blended rate, the dial-a-ride and your trolley together. They've also used in-lieu parking fees that, according to our rules and procedures and state requirements, would not be allowable. The effective rate is about 10%, and that does comply with state law. It does comply with our requirements. It's also still very low. When you have an effective rate of 4%, that's for every $4 in fares is costing the city $96 for every ride. So, I mean, it's fairly expensive. We also, back in September, suggested that you work on providing additional enhancements and bus stop improvements, which has occurred. We're really happy to see that. We had suggested a regional connection, a change in your hours to better connect with the regional system. That has occurred, and again, thank you. I think that's very helpful. It's been helpful for ridership. I would suggest that you look at the last run to leave San Luis Obispo at 5:30, gets here at 6 o'clock. Your system is already shut down. Lastly, in terms of your analysis, just a couple of quick points. The table comparisons.
No, I do this to everybody in the community. You're out of time.
That's fine. Thank you.
I'm sorry, Ron. Hi, Mandy. Welcome.
Well, I don't even have to introduce myself. I'm Mandy Davis. I'm on the Harbor Advisory Board, and I would like to address Consent Agenda Item A4. I do agree with Jamie that some real thought and consideration as to how the Harbor Department should proceed and some restructuring is in order. If you choose not to take that time and to not pull this particular item in harbors, and it would benefit the harbor and the city incredibly if we've got some fresh ideas, some people that can think out of the box, and, you know, beg my pardon, but also some people that don't have 20 years of ties to special interests, people that can really take a look at what the needs are of the city, of the harbor, act accordingly. And so what I would ask of you is to do due diligence. Number one, bring it to the Harbor Advisory Board. Go ahead and, you know, do your interviews, put out the advertising for this, and, you know, and really, really look for the best person for the job, somebody that will bring a fresh viewpoint, that understands tourism, that understands the fishing industry, and that can take us forward into the future with some logical, good ideas. Thank you.
Thank you, Mandy. Thanks for coming down tonight. Hi. Welcome.
My name's Mark Hammerding. I'm a small boat fisherman here in the harbor. And like Mandy, I would like to see some other ways of looking for a candidate for this new position that's going to open up. Executive administrator, I believe it is. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mark. Thank you for coming down. Craig.
Hi. In recognition of St. Patrick's Day, my name tonight is Craig O. Schmidt. Be careful with that, Keith. And to celebrate St. Patrick's Day tomorrow, from 5 to 7 o'clock, Coast National Bank will be having an open house. And it doesn't get any more Irish than that. So please join them from 5 to 7 at 898 Morro Bay Boulevard. And then Thursday, the Chamber's having its mixer at Casa de Flores. If you remember last year's mixer, they went way over the top with regards to food and beverage and networking and fellowship. It was a great event, and we anticipate the same this week, Thursday from 5:30 to 7 o'clock at 1405 Teresa Drive in Morro Bay. Thank you.
Thank you, Craig. Anyone else? Hi, Betty.
My name is Betty Winholtz, and I would add a note that I was surprised that it was listed in the staff report that you're not going out to search for a department head as you are with the police chief, as it was announced in the paper. So I would add my thoughts as well that what's good for one department is good for another, and that they should be treated with the same respect. I want to speak tonight about this person named Mr. Coney. He's been in the news, hopefully, lately. He is considered the number one enemy of the world today, and his crime is that he captures children and he turns them into soldiers, 8, 9, 10-year-olds. He makes them kill their parents, and he shows them how to mutilate people. He's the number one criminal in the United States. The children and the youth of the world are trying to make this person famous, not because he's a good guy, but because they need for the governments to know who he is so he can be captured. The last 10 years, he's been operating in Uganda, and finally, the U.S. government was convinced to send advisors to teach their government how to chase and try to get him. What he did was leave the country, and he's now in the Congo. So the children who are running this program, and with the help of a father in L.A., has put the deadline of 2012 December to capture this man. And in order to do that, they want the world to know who he is. And so I'm here to ask you, as parents and grandparents and guardians of the children, to send a letter to the President of the United States to agendize it for your next meeting and ask him to not withdraw his advisors in Africa, but to keep them there so they might capture this man.
Thank you, Betty. And compliments on your shirt. Good evening, Gary.
Good evening, Mayor, City Council, the worker bees of Morro Bay. Two things. Thank you, Mayor, for that introduction about having a good campaign for everybody. I wish everybody their good luck. Also, I do want to mention, thank Councilman Johnson, Councilwoman Johnson, about the Morro Photo Expo. That's a great event. It gets bigger and bigger every year. I met somebody yesterday from Saskatchewan, Canada, that's attending it, came all the way down here to take this. I'll be teaching two classes, basic digital photography. I have 20 people so far. That's on Main Street. And he went down there and you cleaned it up. And thank you very much, because when he did clean it up, he found it. There were some drug dealers in there. Also, there were some people that were stealing homes in Morro Bay, and they caught one of them that was in this group of people. So, Chief, you only have a couple weeks left. You got to find somebody to replace you. You're too good. I can't believe it. I just feel the pain, but I know it's good for your family and so forth. But anyway, thanks, Chief. Thank you.
Thank you, Gary. Thanks for your comments. Anyone else? Anybody? Going once. Going twice. Back to council. Thank you, Robert. I guess he left for coming down tonight. Susan, Kelly, Jamie, Keith, Ron, Mandy, Mark, Betty, Craig, and Gary. Thank you for your comments. We appreciate it very much. We are at the consent calendar. Anyone want to pull any items? Noah?
Yeah, I'd like to pull A4 and A2.
George? Nancy?
A5, so George and I can step down.
Then can I hear a motion, please, approving items A1 and A3?
So moved.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. A2, Noah.
So I'm just pulling A2, which is authorization to pursue federal funding for the community bus, the volunteer bus program, and purchase of a bus for that program. And I just wanted to thank our staff for making that shift, as it was obvious we needed to, and for the continued pursuit of funding for the community volunteer bus. With that, I'll move approval of A2.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. A4, Noah.
Okay, I'm pulling A4 to talk a little bit more. This is the harbor director and the structure for the harbor director and proposed harbor business manager. It's not the most comfortable thing to talk about, but I'm sure we've all noticed the amount of input we've received regarding the future of the harbor departments and the leadership there. And I felt it was important for us to follow through with that, and just say personally, I totally, completely respect Mr. Endersby and the work that he's done and the time he's served here in the community. But in the process, I think we are moving too quickly through the process. I'd like to see a request for qualifications, a little more of a recruitment review, so that we had, ultimately, when we come down to making that final choice of our harbor director, we have the absolute confidence and credibility in that decision that I think is warranted and that our harbor deserves. So I know it's not exactly what this item is tonight, but I don't really see any other opportunity to raise that issue, and I felt like it was an important thing to say.
Any other comments on this? George?
I kind of agree with Noah here, and I think we should put out some and have some applications come in and take a look at that. And gosh, if our man Eric it matches up and is the man for it, well, then he ought to get the job. But I think there's been just too many people. I've had a lot of phone calls, and so I'm going to just have to go along with this, that we need to put out an application. And I also, we're dealing with this other person, harbor business manager. I think it all goes hand in hand here. So we'll see what everybody else has got to say about this.
Just take a turn. I'll go next.
I'm ready, if it's okay.
You want to go ahead?
Oh, okay. I listened carefully to what was said tonight, and I've met with a couple of people and received some emails also. Yet, on the other side of the coin, I've also received some emails and responses encouraging us to go on and appoint Eric into this position. So I think I would be in favor of doing that for a couple of reasons. Number one, we're already going to be looking for a harbor business manager as well as a police chief. And above all else, I do not want to be micromanaging our city manager who's in charge of hiring.
Where are you going? Go
ahead.
I think we have an obligation to support our city manager, period. She did the way she operates.
Redefining his job description a slight bit and lessening the other positions. So he's certainly been qualified for a year and a half, so I don't have a concern that he wouldn't be qualified tomorrow at the same level.
Do you have anything else you either one of you want to say before we move on this?
I'll make a motion to move approval of A4.
Second.
A4.
Further discussion? All in favor, say
aye. Can I put in here?
Yeah, you may.
Okay. Are we also approving that this harbor business manager be
yes,
hired? Yes. Moving the motion, yes.
I have a really feeling about this that we should be hiring a harbor manager, that a harbor director that can handle these leases and take them along with our attorney. I don't understand why we have to bring in another position of $58,000 to $71,000. This harbor director should have the ability to do this. We should be having a harbor director do this, and you know, and then another person just running the patrol officers. The harbor patrol office. I don't understand. I don't understand this harbor business manager at all. I like to see us at least go on for maybe 6 months or something to see how this is going to work out, where the city attorney and the harbor director can handle this business management.
You have anything?
Well, I'll stand by my comments that I do think it's the position warrants, the importance of the position warrants a review of qualified applicants before we make the final decision.
Did you feed that back to Andrea in that 1 week?
Yes, I did.
Did you? Okay.
By the way, I'm sorry, I didn't get, for some reason, I was having a little trouble with my computer. I never got that email. So.
I'm going to call the question.
Thank
All
you.
In favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 3-2. Mr. League and Ms. Borchardt, I'm going to ask you to depart the building. Well, you don't have to depart the building. You can depart the stage. If there's no discussion on A5, could I hear a motion approving?
So moved.
Second. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 3-0. I know. Well, let's tackle C1. C1, Ms. Luker.
Item C1 is the consideration of the Estero Bay Transit Service proposal, and I will turn this over to our management analyst, Janine Burlingame, for a presentation.
Thank you and good evening. Back in the fall, the City Council had heard a proposal from the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments regarding an Estero Bay Transit concept that would combine services in the North Coast area for local transit between Morro Bay and Los Osos. At the time, the Council directed staff to continue working with the Council of Governments and the Regional Transit Authority to see if some of the deficiencies that had been identified in that proposal could be ameliorated and come back to Council with whether or not that could occur and what that proposal would be, or to come back with the existing proposal for consideration. Staff has met a few times with the Council of Governments and the RTA staff, and what you have before you is a revision to the existing proposal that came to you back in September. And rather than go back through all of that, what I'm going to do is just kind of highlight what some of the major changes between that proposal then and the current one that you have before you. With regard to the fixed route component, you'll notice that the Los Osos to high school centric nature of the fixed route is no longer part of the proposal. That was removed. And so you continue to just have a fixed route loop that goes between Morro Bay and Los Osos throughout the day, with the occasional depending on if it's traveling into Los Osos, then it would come back and travel through the whole of Morro Bay. So what you see is that the concern with having hourly coverage in the south by the ride-on shuttle, the senior shuttle that operates currently Mondays and Wednesdays in the North Coast area, that is now expanded to include the Friday as an additional day, so three additional days on Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday, and that was an augmentation from the prior proposal. You would still have restrictions on Monday and Wednesday, as that would be service available for all of the North Coast area, to having that be used four times in a month. And the Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday coverage would be available for Los Osos and Morro Bay residents and visitors. And that would not be restricted to a certain number of trips per month. So there's a little flexibility there. There's still some concerns and issues with, even though the changes have been made to augment the demand response component to it, and some of the changes that were made to the fixed route side addressing the Los Osos to high school connection and the impacts that it would have to the Morro Bay High School students. There's still some concerns with there being a lack of hourly coverage as we currently have with the Morro Bay Transit System, and Council's previous discussions that anything less than the hourly coverage was not something at that point in time that the Council was interested in. They would like, you had mentioned that you wanted to have that hourly coverage. So the current proposal doesn't meet that. So there's still some deficiencies remaining with this proposal. With regard to the fiscal impact, there's in your staff report, there's two components to that. There's an impact to the transit fund as well as an impact to the general fund. With regard to the transit fund, the proposal from the Council of Governments has a total cost for the services, including the fixed route and the supplemental senior shuttles, at $224,088. This is a weighted allocation that would come from Los Osos and Morro Bay, or actually the county and Morro Bay. Total cost for the operations is $250,000. Less fares, and then the city's weighted allocation is estimated to be $173,432. On the last page of your staff report, on page 7, there is a table that lists what the impact to the transit fund would be after you take into consideration the fares and the cost allocation plan, and the which is the city's overhead. The proposal from SLOCOG had indicated a different allocation for overhead at about 7%, and the city has a different rate set in here because our cost allocation plan would still be in place and be implemented. And I met with the Administrative Services Director to determine if the council were to move forward with this option, what would still be the city's overhead, because there would still be transit-related activities that various members of staff and council would still be doing for transit services under the new proposal. And so the $41,000 and change that's included in Table 1 is what has been estimated would be the city's overhead, and that would be a reduction from the current $109,000 that exists for this current fiscal year. So after all the calculations are said and done, an estimated TDA surplus of $23,145 would occur if the council chooses to pursue implementation of the Estero Bay Transit proposal from the Council of Governments. There have been some changes that will be made for next fiscal year for Morro Bay Transit Service regarding the cost allocation plan based on changes that have been made in the Public Services Department staffing levels, as well as some changes that were made when we transitioned from the demand response dial-a-ride service to the new Morro Bay Transit Service. And so you'll see that there's a different overhead allocation for cost allocation that's listed on Table 1. And with that, there's a little bit more of this estimated TDA surplus for the transit fund. These funds would not go back into the general fund. They couldn't be used for general fund-related activities. They would still need to be used for transit-related activities. And the current surplus that we have for this fiscal year is being used for the city's trolley services. So instead of using general funds or parking in lieu funds, the surplus that we have for this fiscal year is going into the trolley services. With regard to the impact to the general fund, there would be an impact in the sense that the current cost allocation for the fund in terms of $68,000 or close to $68,000 for the Estero Bay Transit proposal. The issue of farebox came up during the Public Works Advisory Board meeting. They considered this item at their February meeting, and during the presentation from the Council of Governments, there was a note that the city's TDA audit had a different farebox ratio than what the Council of Governments had been estimating it to be. And there was some concern from the PWAB board that there was a dramatic difference in those two farebox ratios, one where the city was not in compliance and one where it was. And with being in compliance, there's the potential for having transit funding taken from the city during the time of noncompliance. So the Public Works Advisory Board, rather than continuing with making a recommendation to the council as to whether or not to implement and accept the Estero Bay Transit proposal, they recommended that the council delay that decision until such time as staff and the Council of Governments could get together to make a final determination on what exactly is the farebox ratio for the city and whether or not there would be a penalty for being in noncompliance. Since the staff report was written, staff has met with the Council of Governments. There's been discussions between the both parties as well as the city's auditor on the farebox ratio, and as Mr. DeCarli mentioned, there was parking in lieu funds that are used in the trolley services for last fiscal year that had been included in the calculation that they're determining is fair revenues that or revenues that shouldn't have been included in the ratio. So even if you were to back those out and you're using the allowable revenues, affairs, and advertising for the trolley, the city the transit fund would be at 10.5%, so they'd be in compliance. So staff is feeling that although there's still some issues with relation to parking and lieu fees that may come into play, that would only improve the farebox ratio as opposed to making it less than the 10%. So at a minimum, we're in compliance is what staff is seeing. So with that, the recommendation from staff is that the current Estero Bay Transit proposal from the Council of Governments as presented to the city is not in the best interests of the community and is not being recommended for implementation. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to the council for any questions or comment and a final recommendation.
Thank you, Jean. Very lucid presentation. So if council has questions for Janine or Ron, this is the appropriate time. And Ron, respectfully, staff and my citizens have heard this a million times, so I'm not singling you out. If you are asked a question, you focus your answer on the question, and if you get off into something else, I'll respectfully stop you. Noah.
Yeah, thank you. I did want to start with a question to Janine regarding the comments about the shifting of administration costs with the regional plan concept that your comment regarding those admin costs that are currently focused on transit being shifted to other areas within the city. And I guess I'm a little confused about that. It seems like we're assuming that those duties would have to be absorbed somewhere else for another project or another focus. Am I correct with that?
Well, what would happen is that those general fund employees have existing workloads, and there's a priority list. And so right now you have a certain amount of transit fund activities that are going on and certain general fund activities going on. And with the reduction in the amount of time spent for the transit activities, they're now able to focus on the general fund activities that they currently have. It's not that time would be freed up for new programs or new services. It's for existing workload.
But essentially, I think what I'm trying to confirm is that that would allow those employees the opportunity to work on other areas that need attention as well. So I guess I find it it's hard to accept that as a drawback potentially of the regional plan. I'm not saying I'm in favor of either at this point, but I wouldn't put that in the category of a drawback for the regional plan. It would be a challenge with the impact of the general fund, and that'd be something that we'd have to deal with. But I wanted to point that out. I'll just say by my experience with sitting in on the Public Works Advisory Board and their discussions that each round of this that we've gone through now for over a year with the Public Works Advisory Board, I think the issue has become clearer, and the members of the board, I know that they have concerns about that. And another thing that I think is interesting in the sense of giving this a little more time is that we are transitioning away from a major change in the service levels, and therefore a little more time would give us a chance to look at the updated performance of the transit and the ridership and so on, and that would definitely help me in helping to determine, you know, the direction. It's hard to see trends right now because everything is so in flux, but it seems like we're starting to get closer to that point where a trend would at least be a part of the decision instead of an unknown completely. So these are more comments than anything else. I think I'll pass it around, and I wouldn't mind if Ron had the chance to speak as well on this.
You may ask Ron a question. I'm not inclined to let Ron come up and make a speech, though. Is that what you're saying?
Let me extend him a question that's fairly broad-based in your parameters of being limited with his response, but I'd like him to respond if there's anything that he thinks we're missing here with this report or something that is of key detail that he wasn't able to address during public comment.
Can you do that in a few minutes?
Perhaps maybe if you focus on Table 1, on page 7 of your staff report, and if you're looking at a further analysis of this, you may want to make certain you're looking at apples-to-apples comparisons, and I don't believe this does that. For instance, what's identified as the COG proposal looks at a fixed route service, and it looks at the senior subsidy, the senior program, X days of dollar ride per day, sum total. The Morro Bay Transit Service only looks at the dialer ride or the dial a call. It doesn't include the trolley service. It doesn't include the senior services. So it's not an apples to apples comparison. So I would urge you to, if you were looking at this some more, that you assure that you're getting an apple-to-apple comparison. The same thing might be said of some of the projections where there's different assumptions being used in the projections identified. Slow COG's overhead is a different rate. You know, that we're using industry standard. Your staff is using one based upon city conditions, so it's a little bit different, but I would think that you'd really want to try and at least identify, you know, equivalent proposals on each. Same thing could be said relative to the fare revenue, which shows that at $19,000, where currently your revenue is about $11,000, you haven't had $19,000 for some time. It appears overly optimistic. So those are just some quick comments of, in terms of any analysis.
Thank you. Anything else?
That was my last point that Mr. DeCarli just brought up was, going forward, it is very important for us to look at where the trolley fits in either scenario. And I think that comment about apples-to-apples comparison is particularly important because you can get pretty distracted in the numbers about service levels, and it would really help us make this final decision to have as clear a comparison between the two as possible.
With council's okay, I'm going to ask Janine to respond to this. I'm sensing you want to say something on this subject.
Oh, just with regard to the trolley, as noted in the staff report, the Estero Bay transit proposal doesn't include the trolley in there. So the Table 1 costs for either Morro Bay Transit or Estero Bay Transit does not include the trolley. So a separate negotiation would have to occur. This is my understanding from COG when it was brought up that trolley was not part of this from the beginning, that a separate negotiation would occur and be included in with a cooperative agreement. I would presume, since it's a fixed route, that you might take the vehicle service per hour cost that they've listed for the fixed route service for Estero Bay Transit, and then take the number of trolley hours that you have to get a rough idea of what the cost would be. But I don't know if the RTA would have or COG would have any additional costs added to it for overhead or oversight, because you're adding some additional service that wasn't contemplated maybe in the cost for the Estero Bay Transit service. And as far as the Morro Bay Transit service, that's the fixed route, the call ride services, which is the demand response component. The Estero Bay is the fixed route and the supplement 1% over last year, the same period of time. So we have been making some improvements. As Mr. DeCarli mentioned, there was back in the fall, there was some discussion about better coordinating times at the city park stop with the RTA buses and changes that they had made to their services. So now all of the transit services, local and regional, are pulsing at City Park at the same time. And we've seen some increases in ridership after that occurred. And we've got the new transit stop and information kiosk displays that have been placed at all the existing Morro Bay Transit stops. Those went up within the last couple of weeks, and we've had people noticing them, so a little more awareness there as well. Beyond that, we were at 4 riders per hour, and last year and this year we're about 6, so we've come up there as well.
Great. So we're on the upswing. Carla.
On the upswing, but still at half the average. That's concerning. 4 to 6 versus 10 to 12 as an average. And I will simplify it and concur for the most part with Councilmember Smuckler. I know he's been following this at PWEB. It's come back to us several times over the last year or two. We're going to continue to be challenged with a change in service based on the decrease in subsidized funding for it and the reliance of our general fund and other monies from within. So I would certainly be supportive of having PWEB finish what they've started in working with this process with SLOCOG and looking at an opportunity to see if we can improve the service and at an affordable price.
Thanks, George. Nancy?
I think will be a quick question for Janine. You mentioned just briefly penalties for noncompliance. Can you talk a little bit about more that, what that means?
In the Transportation Development Act, one of your requirements is to have this 10% fare box ratio for rural services. If you don't meet that, the first year you don't meet that is considered your grace year. The second year you don't meet that is the second year becomes your compliance year. You either are in compliance with the 10% or you're not. If you're not, then my understanding is that the difference in fare between the fares that you would need to have received in order to get the 10% and the actual fares you receive is what would be withheld from the system. And I don't I have not heard, there was a mention at the Public Works Advisory Board of future local transportation funds, increases to those funds that would also be taken, but I have not been able to identify where in the TDA law that that comes from. Specifically with the state transit assistance funds, what I just outlined was what the penalty phase.
Okay, so when you talk about the system, that would mean some of the monies would go back to the state or to the county?
My understanding, and Ron can correct me if I'm kind of straying off with it, is that those funds are withheld until such time as the city can come into compliance. I don't know if there's a period of time where you have that if after 3 years, 5 years, you're not in compliance, then those funds revert back to the state or revert back to the county for redistribution. I'm not aware of that, but my understanding is that they're withheld until such time as you come into compliance.
And how many years exactly are we into this process?
We're in year two of the Morro Bay Transit Services. The fiscal audit that was talked about with the fare box ratio was for fiscal year 10-11, so last fiscal year. So if the city is determined to be in non-compliance, which after discussions with the Council of Governments on the fare box ratio, it's looking like we are in compliance, then we don't have this potential issue for 10-11. Now, in 11-12, once this year completes, there will be another audit that's done for this fiscal year and a new ratio that's developed, and you're either in compliance with the 10% or you're not. And then if the city is not in compliance, that starts your grace period.
Anything else? You know, I'm good with, I'm good, but I'm reluctant, to do recommendation number two. I'm wondering, it seems to me like we've been working on this for a year and we're where we are, but I do respect PWAB and I do respect their recommendations, and I tend to want to include that, but if there's no objection from council, we can just look at Janine and ask you to make sure that that's done. Anything else? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carries 5-0. We'll take a 10-minute break. B1, Kathleen.
Good evening, Council and Mayor. This is the introduction and first reading of an ordinance amending Chapter 17.48.4.32, secondary units, and more specifically the minimum maximum floor area, architectural compatibility, parking, and conditional use permit requirement. And I'd just like to add that this has been before you most recently February 14th, 2012, and where staff presented the draft zoning text amendment, and in this packet, which I know is rather thick, we have that draft that went before you, and all we'd like to add for clarification is that we have added the language, which is in your staff report. Nothing in this government code sections 65852.2 or 65852.150 shall be construed to supersede or anyway alter or lessen the effect or application of the Coastal California Coastal Act, except that the local government shall not be required to hold public hearings for coastal development permits applications for second units. And we just have added that we've been, as you know, this ordinance change will have to go up to coastal for adoption, and so we've added that so that we do acknowledge its relationship to the Coastal Act and our LCP. And with that, there's no other changes from the draft. I would just like to make the following recommendations: that staff would recommend that City Council open the public hearing, receive testimony, adopt the negative declaration, accept the Planning Commission's recommendation, which was via resolution to adopt the proposed ordinance amendments that would allow for ministerial second dwelling units in the residential zones, and make a motion to approve the first reading and introduction of ordinance number 576 by number and title only.
Thank you, Kathleen. Very succinct. Carla?
No questions at this time.
Nancy?
Nothing.
George? No. This is a public hearing. If any of you would like to address us, this is the time. Hello again, Betty.
My name is Betty Winholtz, and I won't take a lot of your time because I've made my arguments before, and I'll restate them now because you have not responded to public comment or addressed our concerns. And these are the concerns: that you're increasing the size of the second units, and you're saying that that's somehow a benefit for increasing low-income housing, yet by increasing square footage, you're increasing the price of the rental or the purchase. You're also relaxing the neighborhood character standards from consistency to saying that they just have to be reasonable, which again weakens our coastal land use plan. You have also done away with the deed restriction that eliminates the need for one of the two homes on the property to have to be in charge of the other property, that one is for residential use and the other is for rental, and that now they can both become independent rentals, in other words, businesses, not homes. Along with that is the fact that they no longer have to use the second unit only for residents, that they can use it for a business. And that's not what this section is about in the ordinance. Again, you've ignored the idea that adding another 300, we've gone from 900 to 1,200 square feet, adds another bedroom, which adds another car, and so you did not address that in the negative declaration in terms of the gas emissions increase of traffic on streets, parking, and circulation. So those are my complaints, and they're the ones that I'll send to the Coastal Commission.
Thank you, Betty. Anyone else?
Smaller unit to the owner of the primary unit. The state mandate says a unit can be anything up to 1,200 square feet. And I repeat, up to. And the state mandate does not say it has to be on every lot in the city. You have dismissed all the state intentions and want to create a bunch of rental units that will make Morro Bay into a tenement community with lots of parking problems. This ordinance, which creates crowding on small lots and dismisses the parking restrictions and the use permit, will change the character of the city and make it a less desirable place to live. Anyone on this council who votes for this ordinance does not represent the residents and should not be reelected to office. Thank you.
Thank you, Dorothy. Anyone else? Nobody? I'll bring it back to council. And when did I start last time? Down there? Noah.
Well, I would also say that I said most of the feelings that I have on this issue during the last discussion we had about this. Those haven't changed. I agree with the majority of what was said just previously in public comments. This really seems like an arbitrary decision that's overriding a valid and thoughtful public input process that we pursued on a previous council. And for me personally, I don't agree that this increase is going to increase affordability in the community. It seems to go counter to that, actually. So overall, I'm going to vote no for this.
George? Nancy?
Do you want to be first?
Sure. You can.
I'll let Nancy go. I would like to ask a question of the city attorney first. And excuse me, if there's a recall of a recollection of the magnitude of outreach for the change in the secondary units, because there's been comments said that there were several workshops, and it's my understanding that they were never workshops on secondary units, and the process was literally done within a few months. If you could address that.
Yes, good evening. There was at the last time this was in front of the council, that issue came up, and there was someone from the public that mentioned there was three workshops. So I did go back and look at that. This issue was raised for the very first time in January of 2005 by council member Elliott at that time. First time it was heard was in front of the, he directed it to go to the Planning Commission for review because of the new law that just passed, making it non-discretionary. It went to the PC on February 22nd and March 7th, not as workshops, but just as part of their agenda item. And then it came to first reading in front of the council without any workshops in April and was passed in May of that year. So there wasn't any workshops. I think that spoke this evening was referring to the workshops that had to do with the FAR and the mansionization, which was much after 2005. I believe that was 2008. So.
Okay, Kathleen, based on what I heard from public comment, I have a couple of questions for you. Can a property owner really operate a business in a secondary unit that's in an R1 zone?
They could apply for a home occupation just like anybody else could, you know,
so
So
anyone could do that, not just someone who has a secondary unit.
Right. You can operate a home business from your home. So if you're living there and it's rented to you and it's your home, you would have the same rights as anybody else.
Thank you. So that doesn't change anything. Okay. The other thing, is the term that we now are using that we get from the state of California, a granny unit or a secondary living unit?
I think it's secondary living unit. Yeah, I think granny unit is just a...
kind of a colloquialism that people have used.
Or mother-in-law's quarters, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and my last question. If someone chooses to build a secondary unit of any kind, do the setbacks and property coverage rules still apply to that piece of property?
Yes, they do.
Thank you so much for clarifying those issues.
Yeah, I would add, on my block alone, there's two home businesses that have been there as well. Steve Carnes, I guess, came after us, but he's been there a long time now. And Angeline Vollmer, her design business, is in a little secondary house in the backyard, both legally operating. There are many of those around town. This is not a new thing. And so it even easier than I suggested. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carries 4-1.
Mayor Yates?
Yes.
This is a title reading by the...
This is ordinance number 576, an ordinance of the City of Morro Bay announcing findings and adopting amendments to Title 17 of the Municipal Code to establish provisions for ministerial review of secondary dwelling units and guest houses in all zones where single-family homes are a permitted use.
Well done. D1 Chief Pond.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. At the January 10th City Council meeting, Council requested staff bring back an informational report regarding our sprinkler ordinance as it relates to residential and commercial properties as well as local versus state regulations. To help Council understand the differences between the codes, staff provided Table 1 in the staff report indicating state minimum code compared to the Morro Bay minimum code for each occupancy group. Table 2 was also provided to provide to show Morro Bay's a comparison of Morro Bay's ordinance to the rest of San Luis Obispo County. While it's easy to see that Morro Bay's ordinance is more restrictive than the state minimum codes, Table 2 shows the City of Morro Bay is in line with the majority of the jurisdictions in San Luis Obispo County. When looking at the comparisons, I'd like you to keep in mind that state building and fire codes address minimum standards only, but allow each community to provide more stringent requirements based on their own unique circumstances. The fire service mission is to protect life, property, and the environment. Working against us all the time are the facts that fires double in size every 5 to 6 minutes. Today's fires burn hotter than ever before due to the plastics, synthetics, and other highly combustible contents, and buildings collapse faster due to the use of lightweight construction techniques. Sprinklers, however, provide firefighters additional time to get water on the fire quickly, slowing a fire's progress, allowing time for people to exit a building, and give small departments like ours a better chance for success. Statistics collected by the National Fire Protection Agency clearly show sprinklers have proven their effectiveness in keeping fires small, reducing loss of life, and reducing property loss. There are a lot of benefits to contractors and construction projects when they are installing projects. There will be certain items that can be waived because the sprinkler is in place. We could have a farther distance to a fire access road, a farther distance to fire hydrants. And there, we found back in 2008 when we did this study, there were over 40 of those type of items where contractors could receive some benefit for putting sprinklers in a structure. At this point, staff is not recommending any changes to the sprinkler ordinance. However, we are available for answering your questions.
Thank you, Chief. Nice, another nice, succinct report, which we appreciate. Carla.
I guess part of what I was looking for in this information was that we, at the level of restrictiveness that we have put on some of the less intense uses, yet we've gone to the 1,000 square foot as just a rule of thumb without really, it's just a standardization. And it, I don't want to see something that becomes cost prohibitive on things that are less intense. Certainly, I understand the majority of these, but it kind of seemed across the board standard and didn't have a whole lot of leeway for making some of those adjustments and therefore allowing a more affordable project. So I will pass it down the line for now.
Do another bouncing ball to you. No? Nancy.
I'm sorry.
You can come back to you. You want to go? My concern is construction costs. I understand the safety concern. I think you could, take your argument that we could have sprinklers on the roof, and if the fire, then if that would help. Everything helps. We have smoke alarms in our homes, and I believe that's code. We're required to have that, and we have fire extinguishers. In my house, we've got fire extinguishers all over the place. Not that that does any good if we're not home and a fire starts. But to me, this is about construction costs. Fire sprinklers are expensive, the piping, the plumbing to put them in. And I think 1,000 square feet, we just approved granny units for 1,200 square feet. That would require sprinklers in a 1,200 square foot residence. It feels to me like overkill. So, I would like to see us roll this back to the... I will allow you that. Roll this back to the California. California and... Okay. Who wants to? Go ahead.
Then what is the state?
The state is silent to the retrofit on the residential and in fact, on a lot of things. And so it leaves it up to the interpretation of the code of the fire chief and the at what point does a building become substantially a new structure. But it's the state code is pretty much silent to that.
Well, and I know, my understanding from just what little I've talked to people is the cost initially of a new construction is very minimal compared to the cost of the retrofit of a construction where you're going in and doing the additions. And again, that's kind of where, I segued into, when we are faced with that
cost, it becomes, like Mary Yates said, it becomes cost prohibitive. Perhaps not the granny unit may not be the best example, but the idea being that if you do some sort of addition and then are forced to retrofit it, it stops people from doing it.
Who wants to go next?
I just would like the chief to say again what size house requires a sprinkler system according to the state of California.
Every new residential building.
No matter how big?
No matter how big, no matter the size.
Wow.
Statewide. When did that kick in?
2010.
Takes my argument away.
There's nothing we can do about that. All we have before us here is a possible direction to roll back our local ordinances to match the California Fire Code and California Building Code.
And I would comment on that sort of a concept that is extreme. You look at the numbers here, they're much beyond what we allow now, and I'll remind the council that we have a great fire department and a new garage and living quarters and facility, but we do have response time issues, particularly in North Morro Bay. So I think that there is justification for sprinkler ordinances. Yes, they can be excessive, as we hear, but ultimately they're there for a reason. So the idea of rolling it back to the state requirements, it becomes much too lenient, and I think we're creating more risk than the community deserves.
Well, as the chief has said, all new houses, all new residences are required to put in sprinklers. I think what we're arguing now is the renovations, and that's really the only issue before us, right?
Can I ask a question?
Well,
get an answer.
I thought you were done, sorry.
I just said.
If you're talking about rolling back all of our sprinkler code to just the state code, then that affects every commercial project that comes in. So, for instance, a Group A occupancy, assembly occupancy, the state code wouldn't require sprinkling until it hit 12,000 square feet. That's beyond our capabilities to fight a fire in that size of structure. It wouldn't be safe. We'd be waiting for additional resources coming in from outside the area. Our capabilities as a Class 4 fire department, we can handle a 1,500 square foot fire fairly well. That's 50% involved. Once you get beyond that 50% involvement, you're talking about the fire doubling in size every 5 to 6 minutes. And a department like ours, who has 4 people on duty and then waiting for callback personnel to come and help them out, and then waiting for mutual aid resources from Cayucas and South Bay and San Luis to come, I'd be real hesitant to take a big bite at this and say we're going to roll back all the codes to the state. I would like to, if we're considering something like that, I would like to see something more specific to a lesser extent, but that's my professional opinion.
Well, maybe we can revisit the commercial code at another time and just focus it on the residential angle tonight, because I see that that's opening up a whole different can of worms. George, sorry.
Oh, well, he pretty much answered what I was. I'm sorry, but I didn't hear your question there. Does this apply to all? You said it, but I didn't quite hear. Does this apply to any commercial, no matter what size? Like, if a building is changing use, and it's 600 square feet, but it's a business changing use. Now, what do we do about that?
If the change in use is equivalent, it's going from office space to something also low risk, there would be no requirement. If they're adding 1,000 square feet or 50% of the size of the building, so you said 600, and they went to 900 square feet, that could kick in the sprinkler requirement. If they were going to a more hazardous occupancy, it was a very mild use, low use, ordinary hazards, but now there's going to be some higher risk occupation going on in that building, then the sprinkler ordinance could kick in as well.
No matter what size?
Yes.
And the state now, does that also require sprinkling system of all businesses that no matter what the square feet put each
no.
is?
No. You'd have to look at Table 1, and you could see the different groups there. You'll see the first one is Group A1 and then A2. The very first column would show the square footage where the state code would kick in. So whereas in A1 it kicks in at 12,000 and A2 kicks in at 5,000, that would be your drinking and restaurant establishments. And as you go down, you can see an ambulatory health care facility, zero square feet. As soon as they build anything, it's got to be sprinkled. And it goes on and on down through that list. But it varies between 0 and 12,000.
The kind of tying people's hands and that realm there of being able to move forward with projects. So, you know, at this time, I'm not prepared to make a change until we have an opportunity to reevaluate the resources that we would have to facilitate in the future.
Well, as a retired business owner who used to go round and round with fire departments, I can certainly understand the cost to do business side of this, but I also have to say ditto to what Carla has said. Safety has to be first, and I don't know where to go from here. And in terms of residences, I guess if you were to take a little tiny house, and we have a lot of those up in North Morro Bay where we don't have the fastest response time, and you double the size of that house, or add a second story, or build up the side of a hill, that brings up a whole nother issue. I have questions, but I don't have any answers at this point. I'm sorry.
And I know this is a long-range thing, but, you know, go back and take my block. I don't think any of the houses on my block are sprinkled, so I think probably 95% of the houses in Morro Bay aren't sprinkled, and most of those houses are going to last another 50 years, and this building's not sprinkled. The safety thing, am I wrong?
I don't think so.
Okay. The safety, you know, I had a conversation with somebody else, and we used the babies. You know, it's like house with our next door house, and it's got four babies, and the house catches on fire, and the babies, and, you know, nobody wants to see property hurt, and especially nobody wants to see anybody physically hurt, and especially babies. But where do you stop? And clearly your feeling is we stop with what we've got. That's good for you. It could be taken even further. You know, I would like to see it rolled back, but clearly we've got a majority here that's not in that mood, and I'm a believer of the process. So, anything else? I don't think we need to do a motion or anything on this, do we? No?
I would just say that it was quite an education to read it because I had no idea
that
it...
Yeah, the chart, but...
Yeah, it really was eye-opening.
Okay, any other comments on this?
Yeah, I'll say, too, that I do appreciate that within this, the chief has some discretion to apply. And, you know, I think he's heard all of our concerns about barriers to compatible businesses making adjustments or structures making adjustments, and that the lower thresholds here for residential renovations are still available. So people do have some options if the burden of the sprinkler ordinance is too great, that there is some flexibility there, and that the chief can apply that at his discretion as well.
Are you going to, like, flip one house, have to force them to sprinkle the next house not because you have that discretion?
No, on the residential code, it's pretty straightforward, and the 50% or the 100 or the 1,000 square feet, that's pretty straightforward. There are some places in the commercial code where, for practical difficulties, there are decision points for the fire official to make.
Okay. I think we've chewed this up enough. D2, who gets this, Rob or Joe? Sorry, Joe. Good evening, Rob.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, Council. The item before you tonight on D2 is our ever-popular access to the beach at the Rock parking lot. This item was before you on October 31st, and the council agreed to send it back to each of the advisory boards for their recommendations on this. It's gone to the Parks and Recreation in November, Harbor and Public Works Advisory Board in February. All of the boards agree that some sort of improved access is needed, with a little bit of variety in their recommendations, from ramp with no staircase to harbor, keeping it as minimal as possible, and pointing people towards the existing beach access. And then also Public Works Advisory, making sure that if we're going to put a ramp, that we need to, there may be also other considerations that need to go along with that ramp. The improvements for access from the an access ramp that's proposed up in the Santa Cruz area, that basically ties into the revetment and kind of disappears as you're looking at it from the beach side.
Is the yellow in the lower left hand corner, is that water?
That's sand.
Down to the beach. Yeah.
Thank you. Well, ours would have water there, and I'm looking at this every day. No, you're right. I take that back. Okay, it doesn't matter what my point was. Okay, thank you. That I want to compliment all staff tonight for succinctness. Bravo. Who wants to go first?
I'll jump in.
All right.
Well, I do want to thank the different advisory boards and staff for the input and how this has evolved. And I stand by the comments that this is a modest yet very important improvement for our rock area, and I do believe that our advisory boards made the right decision in recommending the need there. Going forward, there's a couple of things that I'd like to be included as we consider the final design and ultimately installation, and a couple of components that I think would be nice to include or try to work towards including in this is a volunteer component for the installation. I've talked to a number of different contractors who have said that they believe in this enough to be willing to support with some in-kind construction work or design work to help us get to that point. I think it would be also interesting to explore a sponsorship component, as we have with benches and so on. I would think that any volunteer that gave us very significant support to get this installed or that wanted to help with funding would that we would consider that component as a way to get to funding outside of traditional general fund or harbor funds. I think this is important, but I wouldn't want to see us utilize anything other than alternative funding techniques to get this taken care of, and that's where the volunteerism and the sponsorship would potentially be helpful. And I definitely agree that we need to avoid impacts to the view corridor. What we don't want is to create something that people pull up into that area and so they're looking at a railing or a sign or something that blocks from the natural beauty and the view shed. So, and then I do like that Mr. Livick's brought forward some concepts that complement the surroundings and blend in. I think all the boards are very clear that that was an important part of it.
Cool. Jordan?
Well, we all agree that we need this walkway or whatever we're calling it right now. But I took a trip out there, and our revetment out there is just in horrible shape. So aren't we kind of getting ahead of ourselves even talking about a ramp down there or stairways? Because if we need to fix this revetment, and where are we going to get the funds for that? Is that going to come in with grants, or who could I ask on that one? Ivy?
Yeah, I think it would require grant funding to fix that revetment. I would not propose building anything there on an unstable base that's going to fall apart over time. So I think we would have to look towards any improvements with the access would built on a solid foundation there, and make revetment improvements at least in that localized area so that we don't lose that beach access anytime soon.
Well, after we do the revetment, that might change our mind where we're going to put the stairway, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I don't think the precise location of the beach access is determined. I think we need to, there's, you know, forces of nature that we have to deal with out there with high wave action. You know, it'll be a balancing act to build something that could sustain the most wave action or to move it perhaps a little bit up slope or up the beach a little bit so that it's not susceptible to that beach action. I think that'll come in the design phase.
Yeah, I was really amazed that actually we could have such a movement of water out there that it could throw a 3,000-pound rock around and move it around. That's a
really great job of research here. But that first one is really my favorite, and that would be to kind of extend what we have in a natural method way kind of down the face of the revetment and not try to put anything down over the rocks. I'm probably about the oldest one here, and I enjoy climbing down those rocks with my grandkids. It's just part of the joy of going to the beach. Either that or you go around and you go down the ramp that's already there. But that being said, I'd like to ask Eric what he thinks about water action in that area. He's our water expert.
Thank you for that, Nancy. Yeah, there's definitely obviously a lot of water action down there, and particularly in the wintertime, sometimes we can lose 5, 6, 8 feet of beach, and that's what brings the water up high and starts eating away at that revetment. It's fairly rare that those events occur, but obviously if they do occur, you need to design for it, and that's where rebuilding of some of the revetment would have to take place. I'm not a coastal engineer, but I don't think it's something that's an insurmountable obstacle to build something in there that would withstand that. I mean, the rocks are built in there, and when they're put together correctly, it's more than just a big pile of rocks, believe it or not. Rocks are actually, when you build a revetment, they're placed strategically in a pattern that I guess only rock placement guys can understand. But once that gets rebuilt, that restabilizes things, and I think it would be able to survive, provided it's done in an engineeringly professional way and proper way.
Thank you. That answers a multitude of questions. I have just one more, and that's if, in fact, we move ahead with a project that's going to rebuild the revetment and do something very different out there, can anybody guess what maybe the Coastal Commission's approach is going to be to this?
Well,
to it and then have them say, oh, no, you're defacing the beach.
Well, we'd have initial conversations with Coastal before we got too far along in the process. We've started those, and in a concept phase, they view it as something that is permittable because it enhances coastal access.
Thank you, too, for the concept pictures. It certainly helps give some ideas, and I'm supportive of it. I appreciate that Council Member Johnson doesn't mind climbing over the rocks. I don't either, but the purpose of this is to allow all access to the beach, and there are others who don't have that ability based on the way that it is now, and I think that looking at a few of these options, you know, any way we can keep it in its most natural state certainly is going to be the preferred for me. But I see it as an opportunity, and I don't see it being hampered by the Coastal Commission, because obviously looking from these photos, it's done in many, many beach communities and done well.
And even in some of these pictures, it shows where it's pretty much up next to the ocean and things like that. So I hope that we can make some improvements there that will allow more access.
Are railings required?
No. We keep it flat enough. We don't need railings along there.
Well, I'm with Noah. I mean, keep it natural as we can. You know, I'm with Noah also. Let's make this happen. And when you say pursue the project as funding is available, I think we need to kind of turn that around and go after the funding. We can't, if we wait for the funding, it could take a long time. So can we, is that possible?
Yes, I'll work
with
a lot
of time.
The Parks and Rec director on, he has some potential sources for trails money that this would be an applicable project for. I like the idea of pursuing the volunteer aspects of it. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's a group of Eagle Scouts looking for a service project. It might be beyond their scope, but they could help with it.
That was plugged into groups, and obviously he's talked to people and contractors and we've got a community here that I think wants to see this happen. My sense is Noah could come up with more volunteers than you could use.
Yes.
And we can get away with that? Prevailing wage, city contract, all this stuff? Can we do it with volunteers?
I think there are ways to do volunteer projects because they happen throughout the state. Mm-hmm. We'd have to be pretty creative, I think.
Some aspects of it can be. I would imagine the
I think the first phase in the process is have some more detailed conversations regarding permitting with the Coastal Commission, make sure we're on the right path, seek out and secure funding for design work, and make sure that there are not any insurmountable barriers that we have not discovered with construction along there, and then seek out the funding that's needed for construction and find a way to mobilize a volunteer force to help with this. I think that would be the approach to do first is come up with a funding to begin preliminary design on this.
Yeah, and I like how Mr. Livick led with reaching out to the Coastal Commission and making sure this concept's going to work. We don't want to put any effort into this beyond what we know is going to be, I guess there's no guarantees, but to get really good feedback from them will be important. And I do like the idea also of evaluating the sponsorship opportunity for the access way as well. I think that could have some really positive options for community members and for us as well. And I think the design side, we could find some volunteer participation in the design side, given the number of people in our community with experience there. So I don't necessarily think we need to make a motion tonight. I think we've approved this in our discussion, and the concept going forward, I would expect, as I think the advisory boards will expect, the chance to look again at if we move into that phase of design and getting closer to a final concept plan, that we would get a second chance to take a look at that. So you think we need to make a motion or what?
I think if you want to get this done, you need to make a motion and give it a date. 6 months, 3 months, 8 months, whatever you like, because these things have a way of disappearing.
Okay. To make sure that we don't, this improvement doesn't supersede some of those other important goals and priorities that we talked about at the last goal setting, what do you think is a good time frame to keep this moving but not distract you too much from our very important daily operations and other projects?
30 days.
I was thinking a couple weeks would be... I was thinking probably about 6 months to bring something back to council as far as a preliminary design goes.
First meeting in September, then.
Okay, and would that include a preliminary review by the advisory bodies? Or is that coming right to us with an update and then proceeding through the advisory bodies?
I think I would come back to council with an update and then, based on your direction, take it to the advisory bodies.
Okay, I'm comfortable with that. Any problems?
Go for it.
Okay, well, I'll move that we support the beach access concept at Morro Rock and direct staff to return to us within 6 months with an update.
Second.
If I can finish on a question mark.
Discussion?
Yes, can I ask you? Now, we're talking about this whole thing, right? The reventment and everything all ties in together, right? I mean, we're not just talking about we're going to put a design stairways out there or something.
I think what I said earlier
I'm getting lost.
We would have to have a stable foundation to build any beach access on. So we would, at least in the area of the beach access, we would need to look at that revetment.
So it includes improvements to the revetment at a minimum in the area of the pathway.
Okay. I'm satisfied with that.
Cool, man. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Great. Thank you. Thanks, Noah. Declaration of future agenda items. Carla.
I have one. If council's willing to entertain bringing back a reconsideration on a motion made at the last meeting, that became very convoluted as the evening progressed in regards to the staff recommendation for an RFP for the visitor center, so that it's somehow to me got bogged into a sole source and it was not my direction. So it's coming back to us, and I would like to ask council support to have that pulled separate. And
I don't understand it, but I'm going to support
revisit that.
Do you understand what she wants?
She does.
Okay.
Yes.
Cool. You got it.
I agree. I think it would help.
What's possible and what's not. And then include the chamber in any discussions as to where we're going with that.
I support that. And I think part of that, which would be helpful for the business community, is an update of the sign ordinance process, and from the communications they feel that they've been caught in the middle of the new ordinance and the old ordinance, and overall bringing some more clarity to that would be appreciated.
Good for that. I'll see you.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Is that it? Anything else?
That's all.
George?
Well, I've got something I want to talk about here, but I don't know exactly how to go about it. We got a problem down there on between Harbor Street and Pacific with sidewalks. We got problems with parking. We got a lot of issues down there, and I don't know if this could be brought up a future agenda to talk about or what. But some of the sidewalk area down there is so unfriendly. It's just horrible. I watch a lot of it, and people are walking along and almost knocking each other down. They got their dogs, and it's.
How about discussion on Embarcadero sidewalks?
What a great idea!
I'll support you in that, George. Anybody else?
Thank you.
Could we expand that to discussion on sidewalks in commercial zones throughout the city? I wasn't sure at first what street you were talking about between Harbor and Pacific, because there are places on Main Street where there are no sidewalks.
That's true, but I was.
And I'd like to expand that if you don't mind.
Okay. Well, I was really referring a lot right there in front of the Embarcadero Grill and the cannery in that area. There, it's horrible. But I know someday we're going to be doing some different things with that, but.
Okay, we'll do this. I don't think this will require a staff report, and just one sheet discussion. That's the end of it, and we'll have a discussion.
And they need parking down there.
Noah?
Yeah, I have a couple. One is I'd like to agendize the discussion about the community FM radio that's been in the works now and has been actually included in discussion at our communications committee meeting. And not that I'm a member of that, but Mr. Livick and other members of that committee have talked about it. And I'd like to have an update and discussion about city support of that concept.
Done.
Okay. Another thing that I'd like to talk about is a concept that was brought up to me. Basically, the idea is a TOT reinvestment ordinance. The idea is tax increment reinvestments and how to create a opportunity for improvements to businesses without hurting the general fund or our revenue stream. It's been successful in other communities. I think it's worthwhile to talk about how it could fit here in Morro Bay.
I would support a discussion.
That's all I'm asking for.
With a no staff report, you wanted to report, that's fine.
No, I actually do want a staff report from the city attorney, review of what's been done in other communities, and particularly what would need to be done if we'd like to pursue that here as far as in relation to any election process and voting process.
I can't support that without going through a discussion process here first, so I'm not going to support that. I would support a discussion, though.
I think there's a big movement out there right now on that.
Yeah,
I've heard rumors.
That's why I'd like to have a discussion here at the council level, looking at the concepts, talking about how it could fit in Morro Bay. I'm not saying we would be ready at that discussion to formally approve it or not, but to evaluate its merits and have that in a public forum so that we can expand on that discussion that's happening within the community.
I'll support it.
I'll support it.
Then do
all right.
Your way.
Whew, I almost had to do a staff report there.
We've had that.
go ahead.
Oh, you're going to go more, huh?
Yeah, there's one more. I think it's worthwhile to bring up.
You have a limit of two.
You're pushing.
I always do. So the last item is a very simple letter to the Regional Water Quality Control Board regarding the ag waiver that's been in discussion and will be in discussion tomorrow at that hearing. I'd like this letter to come from our water departments, not taking any position on the ag waiver, but basically illustrating our issues with ag runoff and the challenges that that's created within our local aquifer, or aquifers, I would say.
Again, I would support the discussion. I don't know how you're thinking, pro or con, so.
No, actually, the hearing's happening tomorrow, so. Essentially, I've talked with our staff about this. They requested that I bring it to the council for support.
Well, we can't support.
If it goes beyond one individual council member's opinion at this point, then to me.
Yeah, see, I don't even understand what the opinion is. I'm just stating what.
I would go in then and ask for an opposite, that I don't feel it's.
Okay.
I'm just being the devil's advocate there, but.
Well, all I'm saying is that there's a certain amount of impacts the city's incurred from ag runoff.
Rob?
Well, and I think it's appropriate for the city to comment
on
those impacts.
Excuse me, I'm going to interrupt you here. Rob,
for future
clarification on declaration of future agenda items, what we're allowed to do according to the process.
For future agenda items, you're supposed to be specific as to the item you want and describe that in less than two or three sentences to get support to put it on your agenda. You shouldn't have a discussion on the agenda item and present your views and opinions until that comes in front of the council as a full agenda item. So I request that, the item that you want to discuss is whether to send a letter to the Regional Water Control Board, and that should be set as a future agenda item and not discussed here in taking action. Certainly any of the council members can talk to staff about writing a letter. If staff feels comfortable for doing that, we do that. But if they don't feel comfortable in doing that, they won't do that, and that's where if they feel there's a position being taken that could be contrary to the majority or maybe have opposite views. So I would work with staff to see if you could get them to write that letter. If not, then like I said, you can individually write that letter. Otherwise, it has to come back to council.
And the reason I interrupted you, Noah, this happened at the JPA, is that these are the rules, and what we're all guilty of is getting into these debates, basically, that aren't legal. So we state what we want to get agendized. We see what the support is, and you can't sell it. That's what's going on here, and that's why I interrupted you. So I'm not sensing support for your letter here.
No. George?
Sure, we're not even asking. I mean, you can't put on the agenda to write this letter by tomorrow.
No.
The item is whether you want to discuss a letter being sent to the Regional Water Quality Control Board regarding the ag program. That's his future agenda item. It's not whether you support it or oppose that letter. You don't even know what the contents of that letter is. Is whether you want to put that on your agenda.
Yeah, and considering that the hearing date is tomorrow, then it probably is a moot point, and I'll pursue this with staff.
And you can't bring an item to, like, vote, get direction that's not on the agenda.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can I'm going to take exception again and ask staff then that based on your comment that any of us can request letters from you, that it states clearly, according to our rules, that that is the opinion of one person because it did not come before us. So I would just, for the record, ask staff to clarify that in the letter.
And I don't know how, after our little speeches here in Rob's, how far we can go with this. You know, I would.
Mayor Yates, may I?
You may.
Staff came to me requesting the letter. I know I had talked to staff a little bit, and I felt that based on the issue, which I'm not well versed on either, it would be important for the City Council if the letter was going to come from the city to review it, and I think that's how we got here. We do write letters that you don't know about, but if we do, it's because it's a direction of the council or the council consensus. So this one felt like we needed to bring it forward.
Thank you. So, sorry, Noel, on that one. And then I have one, and it regards the state park campground. I would like to bring a discussion and a resolution back next time. Bringing this to the level that it's a crisis and a priority. Got that?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Anything else? Anything from staff? Anything from council? We're adjourned. Thank you for being with us tonight. 8:30. Chief Pond, I'm going to return your cookies to you.
Thank you. Well,
let's take him to City Hall. Take him to the fire station. I'll take him to the fire station on the way home. All right? From you. Yeah.